You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
So towards the end of June, there was a quiet announcement, or wasn't even an announcement, there was a quiet development that happened out in China, with about 40 of the smaller Chinese banks seemingly disappearing and being bought out by some larger banks. And it brought up the question of whether or not the banking system is in danger, whether or not there's a banking crisis. We remember the banking crisis back in a couple of months ago in the US, and hopefully this is not the start of another banking crisis. But for all things banking, we do have one of our lead banking analysts, a gentleman I enjoy speaking to every single time we have these conversations. That's the director at Denka Capital, Koki Koiman, joining me to take a look at the Chinese banking environment. Good evening, Koki. Lovely to speak to you again. What's happening in China? I mean, 7.5 trillion rand of assets that are held across these smaller banks. That's about 13% of the Chinese banking system. That's not a small amount.
No. By the way, always bear in mind, when you're thinking China, it's a massive country, 1 billion people, compared to even the US, 340-odd million, and our own country, 66 million. So it is bigger. The numbers always look bigger, but the percentages don't lie. And indeed, there has been a problem that has built up over many years in China, in the property sector. And that's largely because of the strong growth, strong movement of the population from rural to urban, and then regulated markets or limited investment opportunities, which led the consumer to largely invest in property. A lot like we saw in the US 2008, you remember the mortgage bubble, where every Chinese, the money he had was invested in property. A lot of it was not bought to let out. And that was caused a bit of a problem, a part of the problem, because when you rent, buying property to rent, yeah, you can compare the valuation to a rental yield, but that wasn't always the case in China. The bottom line was there was too much demand, too little supply. It got out of hands, and the banks facilitated this, because for banks, generally, property lending is always very profitable because it's low risk. You've got the collateral, you've got the property. And it also, in terms of the balance sheet, because of the supposed safety of property lending, the capital weighting that banks have to hold against the property loan is very low. So banks always prefer, if they can, to do a good property loan. In China, it went too far. A lot of developers got involved, and COVID really exacerbated the problem, as in a lot of countries, where suddenly a lot of developers started falling over because they couldn't complete properties, and then suddenly ran out of money. The consumers stopped paying properties which they had bought in anticipation of the property being completed. In other words, you almost bought it in advance, making payments before the property was completed. When those payments stopped, the developers fell over. And that problem has slowly been cascading the past 2 or 3 years. A lot of the larger developers have gone bankrupt. Okay, to the problem now. It's interesting that finally has now hit the smaller banks. And I suppose it takes time for those problems in the smaller banks, rural banks, to become public and to become visible. Because firstly, they'll try everything they can to get collections. But you've got a real problem when smaller banks and regional banks, who tend to often be more involved in property lending in their area. So the property loans as a percentage of the balance sheet then tends to be big. It's a lot, as we've seen now in the US regional banks, where a lot of them are still under threat because of commercial real estate post-COVID, where the valuations of properties have halved, and they're battling to actually sell those properties. China, same problem. And the Chinese growth has been very slow, very, very actually, especially regarding consumer. So it's interesting that the government in that regard is doing a few of the right things. The first thing you normally want to do is just get the properties away from the bad banks, out of the bad banks, so it actually doesn't drag the banks down. And normally you get it into specialist larger banks, which I see they've done. taken a lot of the loans off the smaller banks, put them into a few very large property government-owned banks. And those banks then have time because they haven't got the pressure of depositors. They've got the government behind them. They've got 3 to 5 to 10 years to slowly sell those properties or even just first fix them. Secondly, the banks then can be rescued. But as your statistic pointed out, some of those banks have had too much and they are taken over by larger banks. So, but then your consumer still sits with the problem. So the consumer in China will be a problem for quite a while, very indebted. The property that they had is worth half or nothing. In some cases, they made down payments for properties that are still to be developed that won't be completed. So your consumer is very stretched in China. And that, I think, could suppress Chinese growth for quite a consumer growth for quite a while.
Kwaki, you touched on a couple of things around the non-performing loans. And I mean, when I look at the fact that 40% of some of these banks' portfolios still have those non-performing loans, coupled with the fact that we're seeing this as a bit of an opportunity to consolidate rather than to bail out the smaller banks. They just get bought out, they get consolidated into the bigger banks, you have less players in the landscape. Would you say we are on track toward a banking crisis of sorts in the US, in China, or is it still China too early for it to be escalated to that level?
Yeah, maybe an example, older listeners might remember that in South Africa, we used to have Cape of Good Hope Bank, and you had Free State Bank, and you had regional banks in South Africa as well. It's almost a bit like that. So the Cape of Good Hope Bank actually facilitated a lot of property lending, obviously, in Cape Town, surrounding areas. But in the bigger scheme of things, compared to, let's say, Absa First Rand, well, Absa wasn't formed then yet, but okay, let's say Standard Bank at that stage, those smaller banks were often fairly small. China, the same. Those rural banks, regional banks, are fairly small compared to China Construction Bank, CCIB, which owns a 25% in Standard Bank. So those banks, where's a problem in those smaller communities, won't threaten, you know, the system on a larger scale. But yet you've got to solve it. And so that's why I think they're doing the right things by relieving those banks of their bad portfolios, taking them out. And if the bank is really in a bad way, just taking out the banks, consolidating them. I think I saw the statistic that there are 3,800 banks in China, which is actually compared to the US, I think before COVID, we still had 7,800 banks in the US. You forget, how decentralized banking often is. That number in the US has also come down post-COVID and post their property problem. So it's normally natural that you get this type of consolidation. But where we are in the cycle, from what I hear, once you get this consolidation, I think the property problem will remain, but you've most probably bottomed there. But the consumer problem will remain. But the banking problem is being addressed by the authorities. So I'm not worried about Chinese banks. I'm not excited about them. It's a lot of other problems in China that bad debts they're still sitting with. But I don't think it's the start of a banking problem. I think it's sort of we're nearing towards the end.
Not a banking problem, but also not yet an investment case. Kwaki, you touched on the Chinese economy being or potentially coming under strain from the Chinese consumer at the end of the day. How then do we see the Chinese story in comparison to, or how do we see it where it fits into the global story? Because a lot of the global growth has been pinned on whether or not we see significant Chinese growth. And if that's not on the cards, how then do we look at the global picture? Is it a global recession?
It's a big question you ask, but much longer discussion. Maybe just quickly grab back to even the US problems, and also Scandinavia had a huge property bubble in the 1990s, and it took them 5 years almost to really get their banking sector back and property back. So this problem is not going to resolve itself easily. But in China, you've got the advantage that unemployment is fairly low. The export growth is still there. But the Chinese government, and at the moment, I think they're busy with their third plenarium where they're doing the whole strategy. But the Chinese government's objective was to move away from a construction-driven and export-driven economy to a consumption, so more internal consumption. Well, that part, because of the consumer, is going to be difficult. So you're going to have to create a more lot more jobs. They want to do that with huge projects on solar installations, on upskilling the Chinese population. But in terms of your question, I think the three headwinds against China is one is the trade wars that are playing out at the moment, and a Trump presidency isn't going to help there. So China will have to learn to work more with the West, not be as antagonistic. That's coming from my part, south in South Africa. But there are issues that are being faced. They have also a huge debt. Interest rates, fortunately, are low in China, but government debt is very high. So they are constrained. I don't think we must in South Africa wait for the next commodities boom coming from China. If anything, it will come from India, Indonesia. Those economies are growing very strongly and also becoming increasingly larger. But China, I think the growth rate will most probably go below 5%. I see the recent number was below 5% and could hover there for a while. It's not a the Chinese growth miracle is most probably dampened a lot and won't be as strong. But having said all of that, Chinese valuations in the Chinese market are actually becoming very attractive, and that's always a problem. At the bottom of a cycle, the valuations are attractive, but your problems still seem the biggest.
The problems persist, but the opportunities look more and more attractive. I think we'll leave it at that, Kokkie. Thanks as always for those insights and for the time. Kokkie Kooyman, Director at Denker Capital, on the 40 Chinese banks that were closed and absorbed into larger banks, and whether or not the Chinese economy is going through a banking crisis.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.